When Walt Whitman self-published the first edition of Leaves of Grass in 1855, he couldn't have known it would eventually become one of the most influential works in American literary history. Initially met with confusion and sometimes outrage, this revolutionary collection has since been embraced by figures ranging from Bob Dylan to Jorge Luis Borges, who kept a copy by his bedside. The collection's radical free-verse style and celebration of the body shocked Victorian sensibilities, but pioneered a distinctively American poetic voice. Even today, phrases like "I contain multitudes" have permeated popular culture, appearing in everything from Marvel movies to Taylor Swift lyrics. Beyond its literary significance, Leaves of Grass represents one of the first major works to openly celebrate homosexual love, making Whitman an unexpected icon in LGBTQ+ history. The book's evolution through 9 editions during Whitman's lifetime reflects not just his growth as a poet, but America's transformation through the Civil War and beyond. The moment you open Leaves of Grass, you encounter something that would have been shocking to 19th-century readers: poetry that doesn't look like poetry. Whitman abandoned the strict meters, rhyme schemes, and formal structures that defined poetry of his era. Instead, he embraced long, sprawling lines that breathe with the rhythm of natural speech. This wasn't mere rebellion, it was a deliberate artistic choice aligned with his democratic vision. If America was to have its own poetic voice, Whitman believed it couldn't be constrained by European traditions. His free verse creates a sense of expansiveness that mirrors the American landscape itself. Lines stretch across the page like the vast prairies and horizons he celebrates. The form embodies his content, unbounded, natural, and free. In Song of Myself, he writes, "I too am not a bit tamed. I too am untranslatable. I sound my barbaric yawp over the roofs of the world." This barbaric yawp represents both the content and form of his work: wild, untamed, and defiantly American. Whitman's innovation wasn't just structural, but linguistic. He incorporated slang, technical terminology, foreign words, and the everyday speech of laborers and immigrants. He named body parts that proper poetry wouldn't mention, and used the American vernacular in ways that horrified literary critics, but delighted those seeking authentic expression. His catalogs, those famous long lists of people, places, and things, create a democratic equality on the page, where a prostitute receives the same poetic attention as a president. What makes this revolutionary approach so powerful is how it creates intimacy with readers. Without the distancing effect of formal structures, Whitman speaks directly to us across time. "Stranger, if you passing meet me and desire to speak to me, why should you not speak to me? And why should I not speak to you?" This directness, this conversational quality, makes his poetry feel startlingly modern even today. He wasn't writing for the ages, but for a direct connection with each individual reader, you and me. The influence of this formal revolution cannot be overstated. From Allen Ginsberg to Pablo Neruda, from Lawrence Ferlinghetti to Claudia Rankine, countless poets have found in Whitman's free verse the permission to break boundaries and speak in their authentic voices. When we read contemporary poetry that moves beyond traditional forms, we're experiencing the continuing ripples of Whitman's bold innovation. "I am large, I contain multitudes." This famous line from Song of Myself captures one of Whitman's most profound contributions to literature and philosophy, a radical reconception of the self. Unlike the bounded, consistent identity assumed in Western tradition, Whitman presents selfhood as expansive, contradictory, and fluid. His poetic I shifts constantly, embodying different perspectives, genders, occupations, and even states of being. This fluid self emerges most powerfully in Song of Myself, where Whitman's speaker transforms from an individual lounging in the grass to a cosmic consciousness that can inhabit any person or thing. I am the hounded slave, he writes. Then, I am the mashed fireman. Then, I am an old artillerist. This isn't mere empathy. It's a mystical dissolution of boundaries between self and other. When he declares, every atom belonging to me as good belongs to you, he's not speaking metaphorically, but expressing a spiritual understanding of interconnection. Whitman's conception of self draws from both Eastern and Western philosophical traditions. From transcendentalism, particularly Emerson's essays, he absorbed the idea of the oversoul, a universal spirit connecting all beings. From his readings of Hindu texts, he incorporated concepts of non-duality. Yet he transformed these influences into something uniquely American, a democratic spirituality where the divine exists not in heaven, but in the human body, in nature, and in the connections between people. This expansive selfhood creates profound implications for how we relate to others. If the boundaries between self and other are permeable, then compassion becomes not just a moral choice, but a recognition of our shared being. When Whitman writes about watching a slave auction and feeling the lash on his own skin, he's expressing this radical empathy that transcends conventional identity. What makes this vision so powerful is how it balances cosmic transcendence with earthy particularity. Whitman never loses himself in abstraction. His transcendent moments are always grounded in sensory experience, in the body, in specific American places and people. His cosmic consciousness doesn't float above reality, but embraces it more fully. In our contemporary world of rigid identity politics and polarization, Whitman's fluid, expansive self offers a healing alternative, not erasing differences, but finding connection across them. When he says, "I am of old and young, of the foolish as much as the wise," he invites us to recognize ourselves in those we might otherwise reject, perhaps the most radical political act possible. In Victorian America, where piano legs were sometimes covered with little skirts for modesty, Whitman's frank celebration of the human body was nothing short of revolutionary. Leaves of Grass presents the body not as something shameful to be hidden, but as divine, beautiful, and worthy of poetic attention. If anything is sacred, he declares, the human body is sacred. This celebration extends to all bodies, not just the idealized forms celebrated in classical art, but bodies of all ages, shapes, and conditions. He writes lovingly of the scent of these armpits, celebrates the lung spongers, the stomach sap, the bowel cleaners, and proclaims that the man's body is sacred and the woman's body is sacred. This democratic approach to physical beauty challenged both religious puritanism and classical aesthetic hierarchies. Most shocking to his contemporaries was Whitman's open celebration of sexuality. In poems like I Sing the Body Electric and sections of Song of Myself, he presents sexual desire not as sinful or base, but as natural, joyful, and spiritually significant. Sex contains all, he writes, linking physical passion to cosmic forces. This wasn't just theoretical. His poetry contained some of the first explicit celebrations of homosexual love in American literature. In the Calamus poems, he writes tenderly of the love of comrades and adhesiveness, his term for same-sex attraction. What makes Whitman's bodily focus so profound is how he connects physical experience to spiritual transcendence. For him, the body isn't opposed to the soul, but is its expression and vehicle. In I Sing the Body Electric, he asks, "And if the body were not the soul, what is the soul?" This integration challenged the mind-body dualism that dominated Western thought, suggesting instead that our physical experiences, touching, tasting, desiring, are pathways to spiritual understanding. The sensuality of Whitman's language embodies this philosophy. His verses don't just describe physical experiences, but recreate them through rhythm, sound, and imagery that engage the reader's senses. When he writes of swimming in the sea or embracing a lover, the language itself becomes tactile, creating an almost physical response in the reader. This celebration of embodiment was revolutionary in the 19th century, but it speaks even more powerfully to our contemporary moment. In an age of virtual reality and digital disembodiment, Whitman reminds us of the wisdom and joy available through our physical existence. Against both religious shame and technological transcendence, he offers a third way: full, conscious inhabitation of our bodies as the ground of meaningful experience. I hear America singing, the varied carols I hear. With these words, Whitman begins one of his most famous poems, establishing himself as not just a poet, but a national bard who would capture the essence of American democracy in verse. Throughout Leaves of Grass, he creates a poetic vision of America that transcends political structures to celebrate the country's democratic spirit in its fullest sense. For Whitman, democracy wasn't just a system of government, but a spiritual and social principle, the recognition of each person's inherent dignity and worth. His poetry gives voice to Americans largely absent from literature of his time: slaves, prostitutes, Native Americans, immigrants, and laborers. In his famous catalogs, he lists occupations and identities with democratic equality. The carpenter dresses his plank, the mason lays his stone, the pilot seizes the kingpin, he heaves down with a strong arm. Each receives equal attention, equal dignity. This democratic vision extended to language itself. Whitman incorporated slang, technical terms, Native American words, and immigrant expressions, creating a linguistic democracy that paralleled his social one. He rejected the refined, European-influenced diction of his contemporaries for the raw energy of American speech. "I will not have a single person slighted or left away," he declares, and this applies as much to words as to people. What makes Whitman's national vision so powerful is its inclusivity without erasure of difference. Unlike nationalists who demand conformity, he celebrates America's diversity as its strength. "These states are the amplest poem," he writes, seeing in the country's vastness and variety a kind of living poetry. Yet he never glosses over America's contradictions and failures. Writing before, during, and after the Civil War, he acknowledges the nation's deep wounds while maintaining hope for its indissoluble union. Whitman's America is profoundly physical, rooted in specific landscapes, cities, and bodies. He maps the continent in loving detail, from Manhattan's crowded streets to the Mississippi River, from California's redwoods to New England's rocky shores. This grounding in place gives his national vision substance and prevents it from becoming mere abstraction. Perhaps most remarkably, Whitman creates a vision of patriotism based on critical love rather than blind devotion. He celebrates America's potential while challenging it to live up to its ideals. "The United States themselves are essentially the greatest poem," he writes, suggesting that the nation is an unfinished work of art that each generation must help create. In our current era of polarized politics and contested national identity, Whitman's inclusive, critical, yet hopeful vision of America offers a valuable alternative. Neither the uncritical nationalism of the right, nor the dismissive critique sometimes found on the left, but a complex love that embraces the nation's contradictions while working toward its highest possibilities. Long before the modern environmental movement, Whitman was developing a profound ecological consciousness through his poetry. Throughout Leaves of Grass, nature appears not as backdrop or metaphor, but as a living presence with its own dignity and meaning. From the spear of summer grass that opens Song of Myself, to the beautiful uncut hair of graves growing above the dead, Whitman's poetry is saturated with attentive observations of the natural world. What distinguishes Whitman's nature poetry from the romantic tradition is his refusal to separate humanity from nature. "We aren't visitors in the natural world, but integral parts of it. I believe a leaf of grass is no less than the journey work of the stars," he writes, collapsing hierarchies between the cosmic and mundane, the human and non-human. When he declares, "I am the poet of the body and I am the poet of the soul," he might as well add, "I am the poet of nature," for in his vision, all three are inseparable. This integration appears vividly in poems like this Compost, where he marvels at how the earth transforms death into new life. Contemplating how soil recycles corpses into summer growth, he exclaims, "It gives such divine materials to men, and accepts such leavings from them at last." This recognition of natural cycles, what we now call ecosystems, was remarkably ahead of its time, anticipating modern ecological understanding. Whitman's cosmic consciousness extends beyond Earth to embrace the universe. In poems like When I Heard the Learned Astronomer, he contrasts academic knowledge about stars with the direct experience of looking up in perfect silence at the stars. Yet unlike some nature writers who reject science, Whitman embraces scientific discoveries, incorporating evolutionary theory and astronomy into his cosmic vision. The universe he portrays is not static, but dynamic, evolving through time in a process that includes, but transcends, human understanding. This cosmic perspective gives Whitman a unique approach to mortality. Death appears in his poems not as an end, but as a transformation within larger natural cycles. "I bequeath myself to the dirt to grow from the grass I love," he writes. "If you want me again, look for me under your boot soles." This ecological immortality offers a naturalistic alternative to traditional religious afterlives. What makes Whitman's environmental vision so valuable today is how it balances scientific understanding with spiritual wonder. In an age of climate crisis, his poetry reminds us that nature isn't just a resource to manage, but a community to which we belong. When he writes, "I believe a leaf of grass is no less than the journey work of the stars," he's articulating an ecological ethic based not on utility, but on reverence. A perspective increasingly necessary as we confront environmental challenges that technical solutions alone cannot solve. When the Civil War erupted in 1861, Whitman's poetic vision was tested against the harsh realities of America's bloodiest conflict. Rather than serving as a soldier, he worked as a volunteer nurse in Washington's military hospitals, dressing wounds, writing letters for injured soldiers, and offering comfort to the dying. This experience transformed his poetry, adding a deeper dimension of suffering and compassion to his democratic vision. The poems that emerged from this period, particularly those collected in Drum Taps and later incorporated into Leaves of Grass, represent some of American literature's most moving accounts of war. In The Wound Dresser, he recalls his hospital work with unflinching detail. "I dress the perforated shoulder, the foot with the bullet wound, cleanse the one with a gnawing and putrid gangrene." Yet amid these horrors, he finds profound human connection. "I am faithful, I do not give out. The fractured thigh, the knee, the wound in the abdomen, these and more I dress with impartial hand." What distinguishes Whitman's war poetry is its refusal of both glorification and simple condemnation. Unlike patriotic verses that celebrated heroic sacrifice or anti-war poems that emphasized futility, Whitman acknowledges both the war's necessity to preserve the Union and end slavery, and its terrible cost. In Reconciliation, he writes of a dead Confederate soldier, "My enemy is dead. A man divine as myself is dead." This ability to hold contradictions, to see the war as both necessary and tragic, gives his Civil War poems their enduring power. The war also deepened Whitman's understanding of democracy. In the hospitals, he encountered Americans from every region, class, and background, united in suffering. This experience reinforced his democratic vision while testing it against reality. When he writes in The Wound Dresser that he treats Confederate and Union soldiers with impartial hand, he's enacting the democratic equality he had previously celebrated in more abstract terms. Perhaps most significantly, the war experience transformed Whitman's poetic voice. The exuberant, all-embracing cosmic consciousness of early poems like Song of Myself gives way to a more focused, intimate perspective. In Vigil Strange I Kept on the Field One Night, he describes watching over a dying soldier. Vigil for comrade swiftly slain, vigil I never forgot. This shift from cosmic to personal, from celebration to mourning, adds emotional depth to his later work. The compassion that flows through these war poems isn't sentimental, but embodied and active. Whitman doesn't just feel for the suffering. He touches wounds, holds hands, writes letters, brings small gifts. This practical compassion offers a model for how to respond to suffering that remains relevant today. In a world often divided between those who turn away from others' pain and those who perform virtue without action, Whitman's example of showing up, staying present, and offering what comfort he could represents a middle path of engaged compassion. Has anyone supposed it lucky to be born? I hasten to inform him or her it is just as lucky to die, and I know it. With these provocative lines from Song of Myself, Whitman announces one of his most radical themes, a complete reimagining of death and what might lie beyond it. Throughout Leaves of Grass, death appears not as an enemy to be feared, but as a natural transition within a larger cosmic process. This perspective emerges most powerfully in poems like Out of the Cradle Endlessly Rocking, where the poet recalls a childhood experience watching a bird whose mate has disappeared. The bird's mournful song awakens in him an awareness of mortality, yet also introduces him to the word stronger and more delicious than any, death itself. Rather than inspiring fear, this recognition deepens his engagement with life. Whitman's approach to immortality defies conventional religious categories. He neither embraces traditional Christian views of heaven nor adopts complete materialistic skepticism. Instead, he develops what might be called a naturalistic spirituality, where continuity after death occurs through natural processes rather than supernatural intervention. "I bequeath myself to the dirt to grow from the grass I love," he writes, envisioning his body's molecules recycled into new life forms. This physical immortality extends to a more metaphysical vision in poems like Crossing Brooklyn Ferry, where he collapses time to speak directly to future readers. "It avails not, time nor place, distance avails not. I am with you, you men and women of a generation, or ever so many generations hence." This transtemporal connection suggests a kind of immortality through ongoing human relationship, as if consciousness itself might somehow persist through the attention of those who come after us. What makes Whitman's vision of death so powerful is how it transforms mortality from a problem to be solved into a perspective that enhances life. By accepting death as natural and inevitable, he finds greater presence in each moment. "Look for me under your boot soles," he tells future generations, suggesting that awareness of mortality should ground us more firmly in the physical world rather than directing our attention towards some otherworldly realm. This approach to death connects to Whitman's democratic vision. In death as in life, he sees a fundamental equality. Presidents and prostitutes, generals and privates, all return to the same earth. This natural democracy of death informs his political democracy, suggesting that our shared mortality should inspire compassion and connection during life. For contemporary readers facing ecological crisis and pandemic, Whitman's perspective offers particular resonance. His vision of death as transformation rather than ending provides a framework for thinking about human finitude within larger natural systems. When he writes, "All goes onward and outward, nothing collapses," he's offering not false comfort, but a shift in perspective from individual survival to participation in ongoing natural and cultural processes that transcend any single life. Unlike most poetry collections, Leaves of Grass wasn't published once and finished. Instead, it evolved through 9 distinct editions over Whitman's lifetime, growing from a slim 95-page volume in 1855 to the massive Deathbed edition of 1891-92, containing nearly 400 poems. This unique publishing history makes the book not just a collection of poems, but a record of one poet's lifelong development and America's transformation through some of its most turbulent decades. The first edition, self-published in 1855, contained just 12 untitled poems, including what would later be called Song of Myself. With its green cover stamped with organic patterns and unconventional typography, the book itself embodied Whitman's organic poetic vision. Most striking was the absence of the author's name on the title page. Instead, readers found his engraved portrait and only discovered his identity within the poems themselves. This edition established Whitman's revolutionary free verse style and major themes, but received little attention beyond Ralph Waldo Emerson's famous letter praising Whitman for beginning a great career. Each subsequent edition expanded and reorganized the collection, reflecting Whitman's evolving vision. The 1856 edition added 20 new poems and included Emerson's endorsement, without permission. The 1860 edition incorporated the Columbus poems exploring male-male love and the Children of Adam sequence celebrating heterosexual passion. After the Civil War, the 1867 edition integrated Drum Taps, Whitman's powerful poems of war experience, fundamentally shifting the collection's tone and themes. Later editions show Whitman's increasing concern with organization and legacy. The 1881 edition, often considered the most coherent artistically, arranged poems into meaningful sequences and clusters that guide the reader's experience. The final Deathbed edition of 1891-92 represents Whitman's last word on his life's work, incorporating his final poems and arrangements. What makes this evolution so fascinating is how it parallels both Whitman's personal journey and America's national development. The exuberant cosmic consciousness of the early editions gives way to more somber reflections after the Civil War. Poems like When Lilacs Last in the Dooryard Bloomed, Mourning Lincoln's Assassination, introduce a more elegiac tone. The confident young nation of the 1855 edition becomes the wounded but resilient Union of later versions. The book's physical evolution also reflects changing publication realities. From the handcrafted first edition that Whitman helped set in type to the more conventional formats of later commercial editions, we can trace the professionalization of American publishing. Yet, through all these changes, Whitman maintained control of his work, resisting editorial interference and conventional expectations. This ongoing revision process reveals Whitman's understanding of poetry as organic rather than fixed, growing and changing like the grass that gave his book its title. "My poems, when complete, should be a unity," he wrote. Yet this unity wasn't static, but dynamic, incorporating new experiences and perspectives. In this sense, Leaves of Grass embodies its own metaphor, continually growing, dying back, and renewing itself like the grass that covers the graves yet signals perpetual rebirth. When Whitman wrote, "The strongest and sweetest songs yet remain to be sung," he might have been predicting his own posthumous influence. Nearly 130 years after his death, his poetic innovations and democratic vision continue to shape literature, politics, and culture in ways that would have astonished his contemporary critics. From modernist poetry to the Beat Movement, from civil rights discourse to queer theory, Whitman's fingerprints appear across American cultural life. His technical innovations, free verse, long lines, democratic diction, transformed poetry not just in America, but worldwide. Poets as diverse as Pablo Neruda, Allen Ginsberg, Langston Hughes, and Mary Oliver have acknowledged their debt to Whitman. When Ginsberg wrote How, with its long, breath-based lines and catalogs of American types, he was consciously channeling Whitman's form for a new generation. When contemporary poets embrace conversational language or write in the first person about bodily experience, they're working in spaces Whitman opened. Beyond technique, Whitman's themes continue to resonate with striking relevance. His vision of inclusive democracy speaks powerfully to contemporary political divisions. His celebration of the body and sexuality has made him an icon for LGBTQ+ liberation movements. His environmental consciousness anticipates modern ecological concerns. Even his approach to death and spirituality offers alternatives to both religious dogmatism and scientific materialism that many find compelling today. What makes Whitman's influence so profound is how it transcends political and cultural boundaries. He's been claimed by conservatives celebrating American exceptionalism and progressives advocating social justice, by spiritual seekers and secular humanists, by formalist poets and experimental writers. This multifaceted legacy stems from the genuine contradictions within his work, his ability to contain multitudes rather than reducing complex realities to simple positions. Whitman's influence extends beyond literature into popular culture and everyday life. When Bruce Springsteen titled an album The Ghost of Tom Joad, he was nodding to Steinbeck, who is channeling Whitman's democratic vision. When Walt Disney named his planned community Celebration, he was tapping into Whitman's celebratory Americanism. When contemporary mindfulness practices encourage awareness of the body and breath, they echo Whitman's embodied spirituality. Perhaps most significantly, Whitman transformed how we think about the role of the poet in society. Before him, American poets largely imitated European models and addressed educated elites. Whitman reimagined the poet as a democratic voice speaking directly to ordinary people about their lives and experiences. The proof of a poet is that his country absorbs him as affectionately as he has absorbed it, he wrote. By this measure, his success continues to grow as new generations discover in his work a voice that somehow speaks to their own moment. This ongoing relevance fulfills Whitman's own prophecy about his work. "Camarado, this is no book," he wrote. "Who touches this, touches a man." Across time and space, readers continue to feel that living touch. The presence of a voice that, despite its 19th century origins, speaks with uncanny directness to our 21st century condition. In this sense, Whitman achieved the immortality he envisioned, not in some heavenly realm, but in the ongoing conversation of human culture.